This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 4th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Spaceation, Energy Particles and Time. This lecture is 65 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Today we're going to continue to talk about spaceation. We're going to go into energy, particles, and then go into time. We're going to cover this all very rapidly, and if anybody gets left behind, that's too bad. We have a couple of questions here, which have been asked. They'll probably be asked, answered in this lecture just in general. Now, the subject of spaceation is the subject of the creation, handling of or concept of space. What's space? Very difficult problem. This time it is sufficient to answer the problem in this wise. Actually, the physicist has no definition for space. Now, isn't that a heck of a thing? He operates in space all the time. He doesn't have a definition for it. He says space, and everybody knows what he means, only he doesn't know what he means. Now, mathematician has a viewpoint for space. He says point is something with location, but without dimension. It has no length, breadth, or thickness. That is a point, mathematician's definition of a point. Now, that's all very well, but what about this space? Well, I tell you what a space is. A space is something, well, you see, it's like this, time. Time, you see, you have time, and you have the two interlocked, and you have time, and that's motion. And what motion is that's time, operating space. You see how that is? Now, that's all very clear, and I'm very glad that you have that. Because that is the limits of our understanding of this subject. Now I want you to get into something very practical, like building a steam locomotive, weights, balances, and all into other complicated things here in this subject of physics, because we haven't got a time to spend on these basic fundamentals like what is space. All right, let's take a look at space. Now, when your physicist starts talking, remember the other day I was telling you, you can do an awful lot if you have three frames of reference. And you compare each frame of reference to the other frame of reference, and you're all right. If you have three frames of reference, just as you have, if you have three Sumner lines of position, you've got a position. You can orient yourself. But don't just take three, think you have something very thorough. If you merely have three things, each one defined in terms of the other two and without any further definition, don't think you have something defined. That is definition, as you find in the Handbook of Preclears, that's definition by association. What is a cow? Well, a cow is like... you know what a bull is. Well, a cow is not a bull, but it's like a bull. And they're in a barn, so that's like a barn. Now, you understand, of course, what a cow is. That's silly, isn't it? And yet, the physicist has been doing this. He says, what's space? Well, space is something in which operates, this motion. Motion, and that's time. Motion... Motion is change of position in space, and you see that changes position by time, and time is a change of a motion or something in space. You know, what is a cow? A cow is, it's like a bull, but it's not a bull, but cows and bulls have something about this thing, otherwise you wouldn't have barns. And the barn, that's, we don't know anything else about a barn. Actually, it's a far clearer explanation than, well, I tell you, space is something that is determined by time and energy. And energy is something determined by space and time. And time is something determined by energy and space. Now, I tell you, get an airplane up in this rat race, and you get going around this field. And you go round and round and round, and you've got to get out of this rat race before you ever land or go anyplace with the airplane. Now, that's the solid truth of the matter. Physics, nuclear physics, atomic molecular phenomena is going round and round in that rat race right now. What's space? Space is a dimension in which a motion can operate, and that's time. What is time? Time is a measurement of change of a motion in space. Well, now, what is a motion? Well, that's something operating time and space, of course. Now, I want you to get clear there that if you have some sort of a rat race like this, it adds up to space, energy, and time, and that stands for SET, and that is SET. And SET was the most incredible to read of all Egyptian cats. And it was night itself. Now, actually, when you said this, you actually have a slightly wider range of comparison. We've said, what is space, energy, and time? Well, space, energy, and time adds up to Set, and Set is a cat, and that is an Egyptian cat, and it was a black cat. That's all there is to it. But actually, you've said more than energy, space, and time. Space is time and energy, and time is space and energy. You're not out of any rat race. I mean, we're just there. We've got to get out of this association of ideas and get over into another association of ideas before we can determine this. And before we can use these concepts actually and handily in human experience, not just build atom bombs and child's toys and so forth with them. Before we can do anything with these things, we have to have them in a framework where man can experience. Now, you are motion in space and time. You're quite aware of that. But unless you compare that immediately and exactly to understandable experience, these three things aren't worth much to you. They'll build an atom bomb. So what? That's nothing. So what are they? Space is a viewpoint of dimension. That's a good definition. Thought it up myself, I recommend it to you very thoroughly. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. Now, we have such a thing as height, length, and breadth. And you would get here from an origin, you would get X, Y, Z. Now, actually, that's a sort of a floor there. And this back area here is a wall. You see how that would be there? There you've got a quadrant. You've got a chunk of space. It's a viewpoint of dimension. It's all just a viewpoint of dimension. Now, that doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be at the point of view of your space. You can make some space that has a viewpoint of dimension way over there. Or you can be at the viewpoint of dimension yourself. You can walk up one, put one out here. You can be at it yourself. Or you can be operating in a hidden viewpoint of dimension. That is, say, here's a viewpoint of dimension over here someplace, and you can actually operate without knowing exactly where it is. You just know you've got some space here. And if you do that, you have to put in a false viewpoint of dimension. You have to add then a viewpoint of dimension of your own. Now, supposing you didn't know where O was, and you were out here, and you were operating in O's space, XYZ O space, and you're at this little point here, which is point one. And you want to use XYZ coordinate space, and you don't know where O is, you've got to postulate something to use that adequately. You've got to say you know where O is. you got to sort of assume you know where O is. That is the physical universe. You're assuming you know where O is. O exists in the physical universe. What is the point of origin of the coordinates of the physical universe, three-dimensional space? Actually, this type of space is the idiot's delight. This type of space goes into minus coordinates, and down here you have a quadrant. Here you have a quadrant, back there a quadrant, here a quadrant. You've got eight quadrants. If you take three intersecting planes there, it gives you all these beautiful quadrants. Three intersecting planes. It's very lovely. It's beautiful. And the planes don't exist. All they are is a viewpoint of dimension. Now, to each one of you postulating a viewpoint of dimension, as long as you postulate that you do not know where origin is, you cannot then yourself say you are origin. As long as you think, well, there's an origin someplace, and that's really what the origin is, why, I'll just kind of tap in and say, well, I'll be origin, too. I mean, I'll just view this thing from this. But it's a sort of a diffident thing. It's something you don't say, I'm origin for the mesh universe. Just think of this. Just think of this as the thought to yourself right now. I am the origin point of the whole mesh universe. Sometimes people get pale when they think of that. I mean, it's just, oh, no. I am the point of creation of the mesh universe. No. Now, what he does instead, he says, origin, I don't know anything about that, wherever the origin is, but I sort of look at what is there in terms of origin. I sort of look at this from a viewpoint here. That, it's a secondary viewpoint, and somebody must have given it to me. And here we get the whole theory of God made the physical universe, and God made me, but I am by his good offices, good graces, and by a charter, which I don't quite have a copy of, I am able to view all this space by his leave. And that's where you get that. Now, what kind of self-determinism is this? This is pretty horrible self-determinism. Now, what's the viewpoint of space of the meshed universe? Well, the truth of the matter is you are at the viewpoint of the space of the meshed universe with an extensional line from the viewpoint of space of dimension of the meshed universe. You're actually at that point. You want to know where you are? Well, you're actually at that point, and you want to know what you're doing? You're kidding yourself. You're someplace else. Now, that's the trick of the meshed universe. If you can tell a fellow, all right, now look, we're going to coincide our viewpoints of dimension. Now, you agree that it's that-a-way and that-a-way and that-a-way. Now, you agree that, don't you? All right, now that you've agreed that, you have that. Now, you know you couldn't possibly have made that. Now, we'll move you someplace else, and you pretend you're at this new place. It's very simple to take a thetan and knock him into a state of somnolence and make him believe he is someplace else and then actually operate with him at that new place. You could, for instance, take a go down the street here and find a lady of easy virtue and put her into a super trance and then tell her very convincingly while she's in this super trance that you're going to take care of her body, but you simply want her to go down and be Mrs. Eisenhower. The darndest things would happen to Mrs. Eisenhower. This is one of the oldest political gimmicks in this universe. This is so old and so worn out as a political gimmick that nearly everybody has done it, and he is now guilty of an overt act every time he thinks of it. You take somebody's body here and you just change this false viewpoint of dimension. Because it is a false viewpoint of dimension from which he is operating, an extended viewpoint of dimension of the same point in space, he can then be shifted anywhere because he's already lost. He'll already believe he's anywhere if he doesn't know where he is. All you've got to do is get somebody thoroughly lost and then tell him that he's at Broadway and 42nd Street while he's standing out in the middle of Albuquerque. And if he's so thoroughly lost he couldn't even recognize Broadway and 42nd Street, he would shake you by the hand and pant with gratitude. You've at least given him a name for the place he is and the point he is. Now, you recognize that. He's so anxious to be found that he's willing to believe he's lost. All right, we take this fellow and bring him into the Messed University, and you say, all right, now, you're coming in here at the point of origin, viewpoint, and here you are, and you see all these beautiful dimensions. Now, you're here. Now, just out of a favor, we're going to let you into this place, and you can go someplace else and take a look at it. Of course, the viewpoint of dimension, he's right there. He's never been anyplace else from the moment he first heard about this Messed Universe until right this instant. You want to play around with this with a pre-clear, you can feel the walls start creaking. I want to say something about it. It takes two to disagree. If two disagree with the Messed Universe, it'll go by the boards or something like that. It's almost that delicately in balance. It's something you have to be very, very careful about, not something which you have to fight and hit over the head with a sledgehammer. The only reason people are hard to process is they're scared that they'll find just that and go zip and there won't be anything. And so they won't move over here and touch this viewpoint of dimension. But they're at the viewpoint of dimension. They've never been anyplace else because they can't be anyplace else in the Messed Universe but at the viewpoint of dimension. But that is a point of no space. An origin is a point of no dimension. A point has neither length, breadth, nor depth, but it is something from which you could view length, breadth, and depth. Now, if you very adventurously suddenly start out and postulate that you are a viewpoint of dimension, you have broken agreement with, as far as you're concerned, with being where you are. You're saying, I am at my own point of origin. Naturally, how could you ever be anywhere else? If you've agreed that you were at the Messed Universe's point of origin, and then the Messed Universe has given you a point of origin, which you can now use, you have abandoned your own ability to be a viewpoint of dimension. And if you've abandoned being a viewpoint of dimension yourself, then you don't think you can create space. What's space? Space is a viewpoint of dimension. That's why in mock-up processing you get this odd phenomenon, an individual goes ahead and he looks at these mock-ups and they fade out and they get thin and they do this and they wobble around. He thinks he's viewing them in somebody else's space. He doesn't know he's really viewing them in his own space, that he's never had anything but his own space and there isn't anything but his own space. He doesn't know this, so he thinks they wobble around. Getting to postulate first a viewpoint of dimension. Getting to postulate and look and make the area in which he's going to place the mock-up. Now, the way you make this area is simply to give it dimension from the viewpoint of the individual. You just give it dimension. You say, it's long that-a-way and that-a-way, and it's tall that-a-way and that-a-way to a certain distance, and it's wide this-a-way and that-a-way. And it just goes out there, and it's a very finite dimension. I've extended a shell out there and got this shell all around this particular area. And all right, now we've got a space here. Now we're going to put a particle in this, and we're going to make the particle go into motion, and we are going to have a mock-up. And actually, if he goes at it along, this isn't a ritual line. This is really the only way he can do it. He's been doing that other automatic, and let's get out of the automaticity bracket. He's been doing the other automatically. So you just say, Dickens with this automatic, you're just getting postulated space, and you'll find something very peculiar, that the things are more durable. His mock-up notes are, He looks at them, and he's much more interested in them, and they're much more durable, and he's more careful of his space. So, whenever you have a pre-clear doing a mock-up, he will think he's using Messed Universe space, and as such, he really won't have too much verb doing this because he knows he's just working on borrowed space. But that's the biggest gag that could happen to anybody, isn't it? Fella comes along and he says, "Now look," he says, "here you are at this appointed dimension. Now you're going to look at our dimension. Now you're going to look at our dimension. Now look out that away and this away and tall away and wide away and just look at this all. And that's our viewpoint of dimension. How do you like it?" You see, all he's done is make this fellow make some space. Now you've seen our viewpoint of dimension. Isn't that nice? That's a nice viewpoint of dimension. Now, we're going to let you go into one of the coordinate points from this viewpoint of dimension. And you, after that, will be able to view our space. And that's very nice. And we're not going to charge you anything for it. That's very nice of us. So he is told he's at the viewpoint of a dimension. And after he's told he's at a viewpoint of dimension, say, "Help me," he is permitted then to go to a coordinate point in these dimensions and thereafter operate. Position one up there. The only space there is, as far as he's concerned, is the space which he is manufacturing every instant from viewpoint one. But he's manufacturing from viewpoint one a backtrack back to origin point, and he's keeping this space manufactured all the time, very arduously, in order to have viewpoint one. Now, there isn't any reason why he just can't start manufacturing space from viewpoint one. He just manufactures space out here, and here, and here. No reason why he can't. It's idiotic that he doesn't, except for one thing. If he did that two-thirdly, the messed universe would vanish. Now, he does this very diffidently because he's afraid that if he does this, the messed universe will vanish, and then he won't know how to get back to that point of origin. That's cute, because the only way he can get back to the point of origin is to say, "Well, let's see, I'm viewing this thing now from the point of origin of the messed universe. Okay, now that I'm there, I shall now extend myself to the coordinate point one. Okay, I'm at the coordinate point one. I shall now view the messed universe," and he will again. He doesn't get lost. That's an elementary dissertation on the thing. What do we mean by space, then? We mean a viewpoint of dimension. That's just an elementary definition. But it's a very workable definition. That definition will work in physics, by the way. What is the space of an electric motor? The space of an electric motor would be two things. The viewer could consider himself at point of origin, and space would be his dimensional setup. See, I mean, he'd be at point of origin looking at an electric motor. That would put the electric motor at coordinate point one in the viewer's space. Now, we could look at it just exactly in reverse. We could say the electric motor is at point of origin, and the viewer is at coordinate point one. And the viewer is using the electric motor space in which to view the electric motor. See how we could do that? And we could go further than that. We could say the viewer is at origin point and the electric motor as at coordinate point one. But the electric motor and the viewer are both viewable because of the existence of an unknown, get that, unknown coordinate point. And of course, neither the viewer nor the electric motor would be viewing with own space, and therefore would not be viewing with any great clarity. Get that unknown. All you have to tell somebody and convince them of is that it's unknown. There's a fellow by the name of Herbert Spencer, old favorite of mine. He talks about the knowable and the unknowable. Well, that's just great. Anytime you say that this thing is unknowable, you postulate that somebody has postulated it already. And then that you don't know what he postulated. That would all be to the unknowable. I'll go over that again. The unknowable would mean that somebody knows that somebody has postulated something, but this person doesn't know what that somebody else postulated, and then that the individual himself is willing to make a postulate that he will now never know what the other individual has postulated. All knowledge is a series of postulates. Now, anything can work out from these spices. So you say something is unknowable, you have to go through that complete complexity of conditions. You've got to postulate that something exists to be known, and then nothing can be known about it. Big trick. All right, let's look how that applies here to point of origin. We have to postulate that this universe work as it does. We have to postulate that there is a point of origin, and that is unknown. And furthermore, when you start a pre-clear working, one of the first things your pre-clear does is run into the postulate that he can't know. Because somebody else has made a postulate, now he can't know what that postulate was. He's running across an unknowable. You're running across the fact that the pre-clear is certain that if he knows something, it'll blow up. Or if a mystery is exposed, the power will be gone in it. True. If a mystery is exposed, the power will be gone in it. The whole principle of the unknowable, though, and the unknown, and we've got to know, but it doesn't exist, and that sort of thing, depends mostly upon the confidence that somebody else can make a more powerful postulate than yourself. All right? If you believe that other people can make much more powerful postulates, and they're in full control of their minds and situation at all times, why, you, of course, have set yourself up a continuing and continual unknown. You see, that doesn't happen to be true at all. Get up into the telepathy band sometime and find the postulates other people are making around you. Let's see. Will I have chocolate or vanilla? Well, let's see. The waitress looked at me rather hard when I said chocolate. So I guess I think I better take vanilla, but I don't like vanilla. But then you can't ever have what you like anyway. So the best thing to do is probably they haven't got vanilla anyway. Well, I won't order. Yes, indeed. There are much more powerful postulates around than those you are making. All right. Don't get confused about this viewpoint of dimension. We could go much further into this. But that's about all we got there. We got a viewpoint of dimension. That's a very simple way to view this. You say it's down there that-a-way, there's a point, and there's a distance between myself and that point. There's a dimension between myself and that point. It's a very interesting thing that the meter is a metal rod of certain length which resides in Paris. That's a meter. It isn't even the number of something or others. It isn't even the number of something or others. It's a hemisphere, yards or something of the sort. It's some equidistant point on the equator. The French tried to make it this, and they sent a big expedition down to Ecuador to measure all this, and then they flubbed the dub. And so the meter doesn't mean that. It could have been circumference, something to do with the circumference of Earth, but they missed it by enough to make it unworkable, unusable. So it is really a length of a piece of metal at a certain temperature, which is in Paris. What is a yard? Well, a yard is the length of something in England. That's a yard. There are a couple of these things have been duplicated down here at the Bureau of Standards, U.S. Bureau of Standards, and they're kept down there in cages so that they won't get out and measure people. And there, that's feet and yards and meters and so forth. That's what they are. It's a funny thing. You just take it for granted that those things exist, and if you went down there, what would you have to do? You'd say, Look, this goes from this distance over here, from this viewpoint of dimension, over here to this viewpoint of dimension, with relationship to me. That's what your view of it says. You say it looks from this viewpoint of dimension to this viewpoint of dimension, and it exists in space which has been postulated from a point of origin by a fellow by the name of God or Johnson or somebody. I mean, they're just that foggy on it. You would say, space, well, the first thing they tell you, God is everywhere. You mean we can't have any of our own space in this universe because that's all God's space. That's the neatest trick of the universe. That's been perpetuated for 76 trillion years. I think that's new. It's all somebody else's space. So you be careful what you put into it, and you be careful what you take out of it. But the only thing you ever see, which is the most mysterious thing to you, the most mysterious thing is all you ever see, if you were going to look at the standard meter, you would see that it existed from this far, maybe to your left, to that far to your right. Or you could go around to the end of it and look down along the length of it and say it exists from this point here out there. There it is. Or if your visio was pretty good, instead of seeing with messed eyes, why, you'd just turn around to the thing and you'd say, well, it goes from a certain distance from here out that-a-way to there. Well, if you were to lie down on a bench and take a look at this meter, you'd say, well, it goes from a certain distance below my feet. Now, if you turn around on the bench, you'd say it went from a certain distance from my head. That's all the same meter. You notice it keeps occupying different points in space. Well, it's an awfully neat trick of you to be able to do this. Because, you see, you're viewing it all the time from a point of origin which you don't know about and you don't own. You want to keep that firmly in mind all the time you're looking at that meter, that it exists from a viewpoint that is being viewed all the time. That's why somebody's got his eye on you. The viewpoint of origin. That's what we've got here. And all these things I've been saying, you've got an X, Y, Z coordinate there. Now, there's no reason at all why we can't have space that looks this way. That's the Z coordinate, and that is the Y coordinate, and that is the X coordinate, and this is the G coordinate. And back this way, we get more complicated space now. Back this way, from the point of origin, we always have a spiral. And that's twisted space when viewed backwards from the point of origin. This would merely be a fixed point of origin, a more fixed viewpoint. You would say the forward look in this space gives you this picture, and objects which are in that conform to that pattern and are distorted to that degree, and back of this, there is a negative viewpoint, and everything just all sort of twists away. Once upon a time, you probably made a lot of experiments with this sort of thing. Space is terribly interesting in that it is, this is, by the way, torsional G-space. And that is, it would be the general viewpoint, I'm sure, taken by the torsional people. You've seen contortionists? Well, they're operating in that kind of space. This is very solid mathematics. Somebody comes along to you and says, oh, that fourth dimension, that's very mysterious stuff. He sure is. You know, you could have fourth dimension that was a twist, spiral, just like this, existing in an XYZ coordinate. You could say, well, that's time. Oh, boy, how far fouled up can we get? I mean, time is really the fourth dimension after all. Now, let's make it a little more unknown and say that although all the space of the mesh universe is from the viewpoint of origin, let's be very careful now to say at the same time that this space is from the viewpoint of origin, time happens to come from another viewpoint of origin. And if time comes from this other viewpoint of origin, you get motion created elsewise, and time actually comes from Saturn. Everybody knows that. And time is space. When they say time is the fourth dimension, they're saying time is space. Oh, no, time can't be space because time is one of the dependencies for motion in space and matter and energy. So time can't be space. Not fourth-dimensional space, nor 88-dimensional space, nor contortional space, nor G-space, nor anything else. You see, it couldn't be space because space can be postulated in any way, shape, or form. Now, here's an interesting space over here. This, by the way, is figure two, this torsional G-space. Here we have, over here, we have three-dimensional time. I want you to watch this. Three-dimensional time. Three-dimensional time works this way. Now, this is linear time out this way, and it's going where this arrow is pointing. Now, linear time from viewpoint AB moves forward and goes to second A prime B prime. Follow this very carefully. This goes forward to viewpoint A prime prime and B prime prime. That's really what time is. I hope you're paying attention to this. That's really what time is. Because there's always, from each one of these coordinates, a sideways time. Now, it's obvious that there is such a thing as sidewise time for this good reason. There is sidewise time because something happened simultaneously to somebody else someplace else right this minute that you didn't know about. Isn't that true? There was somebody had something else that you don't know about. Something happened to him simultaneously that you were here. Isn't that right? All right, now, if that's the case, there's such a thing as sidewise time, obviously. It might be called simultaneous time. See how simple that is. Well, there's such a thing as simultaneous time, that's sidewise time. And now, when you get sidewise time, that would be known as GQ. And G prime, Q prime. I hope you're following this very closely because it's very important. You see, that goes forward. And that shows you immediately that this linear time, which is to point K. That's linear time that going out here from origin point, this is figure three, out here from origin point out to K is linear time. So you've got that. Well, now you've got to be able to stand up in time, haven't you? Time isn't just hitting you in the stomach or something like that. It's hitting you in the head and the feet at the same time. They're aging simultaneously, aren't they? Well, sure they are. They're absolutely aging simultaneously. And you look at almost anybody, you can tell it. So obviously there's vertical time, which is measured by this coordinate. Now, in other words, there's a sheet of time moving forward through space. And that makes it obvious that there's a sheet which is merely following this sheet. So that all three of these sheets are coming forward at the same time, A, B, A prime, B prime. Those coordinate shields and so forth in time are sweeping forward simultaneously. And after we get through living this moment, it being rather secondhand, somebody comes along right afterwards and lives through this moment. Well, that demonstrates conclusively.
Actually, I'm making more sense up here than a physics professor does.
This is grand O. And this is grand Z. And this is grand Y. And this is grand X. Now, those things can exist then from any point of origin inside the coordinates of origin, can't they? Now, there are eight coordinates of origin, so that demonstrates conclusively that there must be linear lines of K at any time there and at all points of origin, so that demonstrates there's an infinity of time which is running linearly in all directions. Therefore, you have three-dimensional time in three-dimensional space, which obviously give you in its various coordinates the fact that there are coordinates of this space which have partially negative time and partially positive time and which are going opposite directions at the same time. That demonstrates there's an infinity of universes and coordinates and that somewhere in this universe there is a viewpoint of origin, and if you went beyond that, you would find one of the factors of time negatively. You'd wind the clocks backwards or something of the sort. That's space and time. Now that we've made it very clear to you, we will go on. You see how silly you can get when it comes to saying time is space. Every time you say time is space, you're saying space is static and time moves. So you could say space is a static sort of a viewpoint that just stays there all the time, and then time moves through this in some fashion or another. Boy, that'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? Well, let's look at something a little more actual with regard to space. Now, I'm glad you got all those points, and I hope you kept a good note on there. Because the actuality is that the mind runs in torsional G space. In all psychology departments, it runs in torsional G space. And that's why they get so twisted. Now, here's where we have a very nice, pleasant thought for you. I mean, this is a quiet thought. And I'm... You agreed to be in this universe that there was an origin. There's an origin for space. But you didn't agree to be that origin, because if you agreed to be that origin, the only space, it would be you alone who would be there manufacturing that space and therefore responsible for everything in it. And you would not find that very desirable, because it would be impossible for you to engage in any football games or randomity. Well, let's say then that you say there is an origin point of space. That means there's a viewpoint of dimension. You get this kind of a thing all the time. You say that corner of that room goes up that way, and it goes across this way, and it goes out that way, and there's a floor downstairs, and it's an extended line out there, and that other line can extend theoretically from that corner. You say that's an origin point. So let's look at you. We'll put down here I, the observer. And let's put I, the observer, here. And he's at this point, and let's put him there at that point. Now, he's got this kind of an idea on things. He says, all right, here we go. We've got a room here. And he says, this is origin point one, or prime, origin prime, prime, origin point prime, 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 and origin point four. Now there's, he's got those. Now he pins down and postulates four origin points. He can pin down and postulate eight origin points. He knows that if he was in that point and viewed that area, what he would see from that point. So he also knows how these things are modified one way or the other. So he says, look at this room. There are four origin points. There are eight origin points. It doesn't matter. There can be an origin point for every dot on that acoustic shielding up there. But he knows what these origin points are. He's accustomed to that as viewpoint because he's been around himself and looked. So he can postulate these as origin points. And then he leaves himself free to be an observer. And he can then swing himself back and forth on origin points, which are all around him. And he can postulate that he isn't the origin point. And in that wise, he goes into action. You see, if he were the origin point only of dimension, he would never be in motion himself. He would be pinned in one place, and that would be the end of that. But by letting other things take the responsibility for being origin points, he can shift himself around in any confined area which he himself has uniformly postulated. Now, he has been in agreement in one lifetime. He's in agreement since childhood with origin points. Origin points? He knows what origin points the family made. He knows what origin points he himself has made. There was a time in his life when he was so careless about this and he knew so little about it, he'd never taken the anatomy of it apart. Origin points would shift all over the place on him. All you've got to do is feed somebody some hashish, by the way, and boy, do his origin points go by the boards. He becomes sufficiently non-compass mentis to be unable to control the origin points of any area or postulate origin points. I talked as though they existed. They exist for him. He becomes unable to control and postulate the origin points of any area. And if he does that, he gets distortional shapes of things. He lies down on the bed, and the bed is 18 miles high. It is 87 miles to the door. The corridor is 1 inch long. He gets this kind of upset, because it throws him out of, quote, orientation, unquote. So what is orientation? Orientation is the principle here of being able to have
an oak moving. That's origin point in motion.
I is the origin point in motion.
I can be here then, or second point, origin point, motion, two, or it can be over here, origin point, motion, three. This is origin point, motion, one. Now that he could be at this here, two, three.
You see, he apparently is in motion. All he's got to do is keep shifting these origin points, and other people have agreed those origin points and coincided with their agreement with him, so he can keep shifting these things in accordance and in viewpoint of everybody else. Here on Earth, he knows how to shift these origin points according to this society. This is one of the things he had to learn in order to know how to walk, fall, talk, anything else. That's the first thing he had to know, and that's the first principle of education, is you have to learn origin points. If you learn the principle of points of origin, and that's an origin of dimension, that's an origin point is just a viewpoint of dimension, you understand. So when we say origin, we merely mean viewpoint of dimension. He's got to be able to postulate their existence instantaneously in order to perceive. And if he's learned how to do that properly, then he, as X, has 4, 6, 10,000 points of reference, which he handily has nailed down, pinned down, and he knows they're not going to move around, and it gives him a feeling of security. If you want to give your preclear a fantastic feeling of security, start picking up his origin points and moving them around. Now, I'll give you an example of that. Shut your eyes, and take the upper corner, open your eyes again, and look at that upper corner of that room over there. Okay, now shut your eyes again. Now move that corner, postulate that corner out into the middle of the room. Now put it back where it was in the first place. Now let's move it out into the middle of the room again. Now let's put it back there. And let's look over to the other side here of the stage, and let's look at that origin point over there. That's a postulated origin point. Now close your eyes. Now take both of these origin points and bring them slowly together just up above my head. Interesting feeling, isn't it? Put them back where they belong. Second, you do that, leave some people sitting outside. leave some people no place. All right. Now shut your eyes again. And take that origin point and move it over to your right about 4 feet and then back again. Move it over about 4 feet and back again. Now take these two forward origin points, the roof, and move them both over 4 feet simultaneously to the right and then back over to about 4 feet to the left. And then just move them back and forth, till you get a sensation of motion. Isn't that interesting? Well, that's what motion is. It is, isn't it? You're going to experience that. And one of the first things you want to show your preclear is something like that. He'll have an idea then what motion is, better than anything else you're going to tell him. Motion, all you've got to do for motion is just keep shifting OM1 up here. Back and forth, up and down, back and forth. Well, how do you do that? It's just by repostulating origin 1, origin 2, origin 3, origin 4. You just keep postulating those. And you know how the society thinks, and you're in agreement with the society, and you know how this universe is, and you're in agreement with that. And you've learned all these things very arduously. There's some universe race out there, the darn fools, which have postulated that it's only 4 inches across one galaxy. And, of course, if they postulated they only have to shift that far to go across one galaxy, and they'd never get a chance to look at it because the galaxy's too small. And yet, if you want to go from one corner, assuming it has a corner, of this universe to another corner of this universe, all you have to do is take a very, very clear view of some origin point, postulate it, take a clear view of another origin point, postulate it, and shift. Just move those origin points and you're there. That's space. That's the most fundamental thing about teleportation. You've agreed on the origin points for everything else because you've agreed so hard. Well, you're never going to get a solid object to move as long as you continue in complete agreement that you will never change the origin points of an environment. It's just as though you went down and swore your Boy Scout oath and gave your pledged word as a knight that you would never at any time disagree with the rest of the society on what the origin points were. We have corners of a room. Look how standard they are for Earth. Corners of a room. Floors, ceilings, roofs of buildings, ground levels of buildings, and that would be anything from a NEPA hut straight on through to skyscrapers, that there is a center to every cube. You've agreed that. And that these things can be movable in or not movable in. You can move in them or not move in. It's very upsetting to a pre-clear to find himself sailing through walls for the first time. Well, he's just postulated that you can't move in that area. Now, in order to perceive motion, all you have to do... Well, we're in the subject of motion right away. All you have to do to perceive motion... We will have point N here as an origin. To point N as an origin, point N... O1 as an origin. All right. Observe from OM1 here. Now, let's look at this chair. Let's take a good look at this chair. Now, this is point N-O. It's at point N-O right this minute. Now, we'll move it over here to point N-O-1. Now, it's at point... N-O, N-O-1. Look at the chair move. Okay, shut your eyes and move that chair. You shift it from point N-O, now to point N-O-1. Just from N-O-1 back to N-O. Now shift it from N-O to N-O-1. Now, you get to shifting it so fast that it's a blur. Make that chair move back and forth for yourself. That's motion. Yes, it's true. It becomes a solid block. Thank you. You've said that this point of view is shifting. And in view of the fact the point of view is shifting, it's unoccupiable. Anything that's shifting that fast becomes unoccupiable, and you finally say, that is solid. Now, each one of these points has a viewpoint of dimension. Each point in this chair has a viewpoint of dimension.
Well, then, if you shift as fast as that chair, you can get inside that chair.
Sure. All right. Viewpoint of dimension, then, can be existing from any origin point. If you have a multiple series of origin points, you can at any time get... what is laughingly called matter. You can get energy. Anything you want to say you can get. But the mechanics that you use are this. Now, if you want to operate in five-dimensional space, it becomes very simple to simply postulate different points of origin and different complexities to these points of origin. And it's a wonderful mental exercise for pre-clear to start operating in five-dimensional space and do this. He's taken this here. Now he's got O1, O2, O3, O4, O5. And he is at X1, and he has postulated that in any five-dimensional pentagon of that character, course, in any Pentagon, you understand there are many, many areas where nothing is there at all. You understand that. And no matter how much looks like it's there, there's just a lot of nothing there. You look at any Pentagon.
And it's true.
That was a labored joke.
This bears no similarity to any buildings. We'll just say there's nothing in the center here. So therefore, the center at all times is avoided as a point of origin. It's all times avoided. Now, what are you going to get?
If you have X1 X1 moving to X2,
that's all right. X1 to X2 in that pentagon, that'll be okay.
But what about moving X1 to T1?
What about moving that? T is not for time. We're just being very snide about time by using time's sacred symbol for something else. X to T. Well, it's got to follow a route like this. Is that right? It's got to go from here back through there. It's got to avoid that because nothing can go through that point.
All right. Now, what happens here when we move X2 down here to T2?
If we moved it directly and those two things were moving, you would get a flow action whereby X1, T1 flow would push out of line the X2, T2 flow. It'd get sort of crowded in there. It couldn't help but get crowded because when you can't have the shortest line, a line is the shortest distance between two points, why, you're naturally going to get a lot of lines coinciding in there someplace or another. So you're going to get a different type of wave in that type of space. It's going to look different, it's going to feel different, so forth. Sound can't go then
straight from X1 to T1. Sound has to detour over here by the dotted line. So therefore, sound would sound here, bunched up. So there would be a higher intensity of sound at point S.
So everybody knows, who lived in that universe, everybody would know that this was just an S point. And everybody knows sound got more intense at an S point, so therefore it would be a very, very good thing to get a seat closer to the S point.
What do you know? Over here in this figure, figure 3 of this graph, over here, everybody knows that sound in three-dimensional space goes back here to the back wall and hits and comes forward this way, and the greatest intensity of sound is here, right in the center. So this is intensity.
And the sound is blurred, though. There's more sound action there at point IN, but it's blurred.
And your greatest sound clarity would probably be then at back B.
Well, that's just a freak of three-dimensional space. It is distorted because of three-dimensional space and the insistence on putting walls up in three-dimensional space and so on. And so you'd get a different type of behavior of waves only if you had pentagonal space of some sort. And supposing you made a real postulated space that every pentagonal space which goes over to the right has a warp here. And this warp is where you put in the furniture you don't want. Therefore, you could actually train somebody who would see no motion at those points. At that point of warp, he would not make any points of origin. He would collapse a point of origin, and the furniture, which was, quote, in there, unquote, would never be there for anybody. You could train anybody you wanted to, in other words. Just start out from scratch and train people to view things differently than they're viewing them, and they would get a different universe. They would not only get a different universe, they would not necessarily get this one at all. If you would just want to make an experiment sometime, get somebody trained to take every point, every, this ought to have a name, it's figure one here, O1, ought to be called an anchor point. And just train him to have an anchor, here's his anchor points. Anything which he ordinarily orients his scenery by would be his anchor points. And without those anchor points, he wouldn't have any dimension. He'd have to have that. Pardon me, he wouldn't have any motion. He would have dimension. But if he had to use OM1 here all the time for his origin point only and his dimensional point only, you see, he couldn't get any motion himself. He couldn't get into motion. He would eventually get to a point where everything else moved, but he didn't. And he would see motion and freeze. And what do you know? That's one of the commonest things you find out wrong with a preclear. He's gotten to a point where everything else is in uncontrolled motion, and so then he conceives that he can't move. In order to control it, he says, I am these dimensions, and they are running in me. And therefore, I'll stop them by not moving. You get that as one of the first reactions in a preclear. He sees something going fast, he stops. The best way to anchor anything, one of the first and fundamental ways to anchor anything down, is to be the viewpoint of dimension, of that thing, because it is then owned. God owns the universe because he is a viewpoint of dimension. We've all said that he exists, but we've never said where the viewpoint of dimension is, and then all of us handily operate in groups and postulate viewpoints of dimension for that particular area of the universe, and we're off. We're all set, then we can see everything everybody else sees. We can get the same motions everybody else gets. We've trained ourselves to do that. But it's training, agreement, that does that. Now, what about somebody who is unable to control emotion? Let's say he's unable to control emotion. Let's say that at OM1 up there, is out of control. There's too much motion in there. How do you solve OM1's concept of being in too frantic a motion? That's a dispersal case, mind you. He's in too frantic a motion. You'll find out, the first thing you will find out is that these corner points, these anchor points here, O1, O2, O3, and O4, are in vibration. He won't pin himself down as something to move in relationship to these viewpoints of dimension, these anchor points, because he doesn't dare. Things always get him out of there. They chase him out of there. So he's just gotten unconfident about the whole thing, and he no longer desires to have in figure 1, O1, O2, O3, and O4 to be very static. He doesn't want those things to be motionless. He's trying to shift the room out from underneath him on the theory that he might not be able to shift himself out of the room fast enough. Now, you take a little test of that. You'll find most of your occluded cases, when you have them shut their eyes and try to hold an anchor point still. Go ahead and shut your eyes and do that. Take that anchor point over there and hold that thing still. Don't let it move. Hold it still. Now take that in relationship to the other anchor point in this room, O2, and hold those things the same distance apart and hold each one of them dead still. Don't let them shift. Any difficulty with that? All right. What you're doing, you see, is you've already agreed that those were static and stable and there, and then you thereafter didn't like that agreement, and your agreement led to disaster for yourself, so you have decided then that the best thing that you can do is to be kind of cautious about that agreement, and you're actually kicking sideways from that agreement. And you don't want those points to stay still, and that's why you can't step easily out of the body and anchor up the atmosphere. You know what space is then? Viewpoint of dimension. So you can have three kinds of space. You can have point of origin. You can have the viewpoint of dimension, such as OM1. Yeah, this is the big
point of origin down here. O.
This is mythical. Then you've got OM1, and then you've got anchor points, O1, O2, O3, and O4, so that you can get motion into OM1. Nothing will move unless you do that. Okay, let's take a break.